Hello, welcome to the Space Arts Podcast. This is a series where we look under the piano lids, inside the exhibition halls, and behind the stage doors of arts and cultural organisations making waves in the ever-expanding digital world. The Space, in case you don't know, is an agency which supports those working in the arts sector. You too, if you're interested. And you can pop over to the website, thespace.org, to find out about our latest commissioning rounds and a ton of resources referenced throughout this podcast series. And today, commissioning is the topic on the tip of our tongues, because you'll be pleased to know the Space is currently commissioning. Applications have just opened for a new round for those folk working in England, and we're recording this episode to help you throw your name into the hat. So hello, I'm Claire Savary, a podcast coach and freelance associate working with The Space. To help us decode the rather detailed commissioning brief, we'll be joined by a team of wonderful people from The Space across this episode, a chance for you to meet the team. The content we're discussing on this episode is also available in written form on our website, thespace.org. First, let me run you through the headlines about this commissioning round. So, the team will be commissioning up to 10 creative digital projects. Those who are applying can apply for between £4,000 and £15,000, excluding VAT. For audio projects, the maximum funding that you can apply for is £8,000, excluding VAT. The published content will need to reach a substantial audience in England. The deadline for applications is 5 p.m. Thursday, the 13th of June, 2024. And we'll let you know if your application is successful by Friday, the 12th of July. A reminder of the website address is also in our episode description if you didn't catch it. So let's give you a flavour of the layout of this episode. First, we'll meet the team at The Space and they'll recap what they're looking for. They'll also give you an insight into the type of support the team of specialists can provide, and they'll touch upon key terms like digital rights and what we mean by immersive and interactive content. We've chapterised this episode, so it's like an audiobook, and the time codes are available in the description. Feel free to pause and come back to the podcast as many times as you need throughout the application process. So grab a cup of tea and your notepad, and let's go meet the rest of the team. Fiona Morris, welcome back to the Space Arts Podcast. How are you? Who are you? And what on earth do you describe that you do at The Space?
Good morning, Claire. I am Fiona Morris. I am the Chief Executive and Creative Director of The Space. As to what I do, I am in charge of an amazing team of people who have a gamut of skills across the whole digital landscape, from how to engage audiences, to how to produce digital content, to how to communicate about that and publicize that. So as a team, how we function within the sector is we are now, and I think this is new since our last podcast, we are now one of the Arts Council of England's IPSOs, and that means that we are a sector support organization. So we don't make the art, we support other cultural organizations and artists to make art, and obviously our particular focus is on the use of new digital technologies and how you can communicate with audiences, even if they're not in your building or coming through your doors.
And that's not just funding, as you say, that key word being sector support as well.
Absolutely. So we have a core team with the specialisms I mentioned, and then we work with a big network of associates who have experience across an even broader range of skills, yourself included in terms of podcasting, of course, and audio production, but creative technologists who can work with projects that are using new technologies like AI or immersive technologies. And then we've got people who are good production managers, directors, producers, who can work with organizations to help them produce linear audio and video content. So the idea of the Spaces activities is to really support organizations to experiment and explore, to fill in the gaps where they may not be sure or certain of how to reach an audience or how to evaluate how an audience is responding to new experiences and digital content. And that is where our commissioning round is focused. We then sit a range of resources and activities around that in terms of webinars, online resources, and then looking at the kind of the bigger issues that are facing the whole sector. So sort of thought leadership around things like, say, on the online harms bill. You know, we did a webinar not very long ago around that, looking at what cultural organizations need to be prepared for and aware of with the new legislation coming through. But equally, alongside that, we've been looking at how do you manage kind of online harms if you are an organization or an individual caught up in the kind of tailspin of negative commentary online, and how best to prepare for that and to handle it should that take place. So yes, a range of things.
And, you know, I think that is a great sum up, isn't it, for people who may be stepping into the Spaces realms and looking at this commissioning round for the very first time, to know that this kind of key theme, I think, that people will hear throughout this podcast episode of beyond funding, that there is more to this commissioning. It's great that you've mentioned some of the core team, because we're going to get to meet more of those as the episode develops. Should we kind of like look at this commissioning round, which is highly exciting? Would you want to kind of give us an idea of what type of applications or content ideas that you're looking for? You know, we're talking these words about interactive, immersive video or audio. What are you meaning by some of these things?
Really, we're looking for anything that anyone is interested to experiment with in the digital realm. And that can be projects that are looking at how you reach a new audience, how you might use a new platform to reach a new audience, for really quite traditional content, kind of linear video or audio. That's absolutely fine. That's absolutely within scope. Or it could be right at the other end of the spectrum and looking at experimenting with what a new type of experience might be for audiences. And there we're looking at things that are maybe using, we've done quite a lot of commissioning around immersive technologies, so VR and AR based projects. But equally, it could be something really on that kind of frontier now using AI. We've just done a project in our last commissioning round that was looking at voice sampling using AI. So inviting people to come and record a voice showreel. But in actual fact, there's an AI interacting with that and basically actually analyzing your voice. And therefore, of course, once analyzed and it's just broken down into its digital components, that can be reconstructed to have you saying anything that the AI wants you to be saying. So things that want to experiment with how an audience might interact with content. But I think it's also about a spirit of inquiry. And, you know, there is funding here. There is a funding, you know, there's a commissioning pot of between sort of £10,000 and £15,000, depending on the nature of the project that you want to do. Audio projects being slightly cheaper than linear video, an AI project being more expensive than anything at the moment. So there's a range of what commissioning support is available financially. And we know that everyone is pretty cash strapped at the moment. So we recognize the importance of having our funding support available. But we think and we hope that what we can provide around that in terms of support, advice, we go through quite a long scoping period with each project to really interrogate what the idea is, how that idea is going to reach an audience, how that audience will know that that experience is for them, how you can begin to really dig into evaluating how the audience is reacting to that content. Because we've become, within the digital world, you know, very focused on numbers, on users, maybe a little bit on duration and stay time. But really, in the end, what we are interested to find out is, how did that make an audience member feel? Did that achieve something for you as an artist in terms of what the stories you want to tell and how that audience interacted with it? Even if that's 10 people on top of a mountain, if that's the experience you wanted to give them and they loved it and it's life-changing, that's fine. You know, it's about the nature of the experience and how people react to it.
Yeah. Well, should we just recap? So in online, there is, as I've mentioned earlier in the episode, there is access to see the application form, the commissioning guidelines. In those guidelines, it says there that the space is looking to commission up to 10 creative digital projects in this round. You can apply for between 4,000 and 15,000, excluding VAT. Audio projects, the maximum funding there is 8,000, excluding VAT. So this round just being for England, or people who are mostly operating in England, is that, have I got the kind of gist of that right? What's the parameters around that?
So yes, this programme is funded by Arts Council England. So that means that the beneficiaries and applicants need to be artists and organisations who are based in England. So that's with a postcode within England. Audiences, obviously, online, that could mean that you're reaching audiences in England, hopefully, but also far beyond. That's not an issue. But the artist or the organisation does need to have a postcode in England as their main work base.
I mean, you must get to see so many exciting ideas that land on your table as part of these commissioning rounds. What excites you when you kind of receive these ideas, just to kind of help people get an idea of seeing this round through the commissioner's kind of eyes?
The things that excite us when they kind of come into the commissioning round are incredibly varied. And as a team, we have a lot of debate. You know, people will always have a particular idea that just triggers them to kind of, and I remember that one that had polar bears in it, let's say. We have had polar bears. but really it comes down to that very basic thing. What's the story you want to tell? Is that story a really compelling story? And, you know, human experience is much and varied and broad. And, you know, so people will find stories that they are particularly drawn to. But as long as projects are really about making that connection between an audience member, a viewer, a listener, you know, actually engaging in a story. So what we're looking for, particularly even around, you know, within the innovation pieces, is still storytelling. We still want to know, you know, there's a great feeling of a new technology comes along. You know, at the moment, huge amounts of discussion about AI, for positive and for negative. And we're really interested, how will that affect cultural experiences of the future? But they still have to be about good stories. They've still got to be about an experience that will challenge somebody, make them cry, make them laugh, make them see themselves. You know, it's still got to be good storytelling. Just the use of the technology doesn't make a project that will reach audiences and give them a kind of lasting and memorable experience. So ultimately, it's always still going to be about good storytelling. And then I think secondary, but pretty much nearly as important, you know, how are you going to reach an audience with it? Why is there going to be an engagement with a particular audience for this project? Again, lots of organizations wanting, quite rightly, to ensure that they're reaching as broad an audience as they can across any form of demographic. But why would a younger audience, why would a particular regional audience come to a project? So it can't just be it's for this audience. It's like, yeah, and what work have you done to establish why that audience would be drawn to this, and how can you reach them, particularly if they're new audiences to you and to your content? So we're very happy to support you on that journey to work that out, but you have to indicate how you have begun to think about reaching those audiences.
Fiona, fantastic to catch up with you. I always love your enthusiasm for what's happening on the sector and just a glimpse of what happens behind the scenes of the space. Thanks so much for giving us a little bit more insight.
Thank you, Claire.
Okay, let's move to another member of the space team and who also has a fantastic job title. I get really excited by your job titles. Harmeet Chagakarm, welcome. You are digital and innovation producer. What does this include?
Hi, Claire. Yeah, it sounds very exciting, doesn't it? So I'm Harmeet and I am indeed digital and innovation producer, which means that I look after the space's suite of immersive, interactive and digitally innovative projects. So it's about using digital in new ways to reach audiences and create agency and interaction in order for audiences to feel like they're really part of what those stories and experiences are.
I guess there may be people who haven't explored these kind of technologies before. So is it worth us perhaps looking at some examples so that people can kind of get a gist of what we're meaning here?
Yeah, it's absolutely. It's a really open concept thinking about what is digitally innovative. So the space have commissioned projects in the past. So just this year, we commissioned two projects that were working with AI and the organizations and the artists that were involved were using AI to really explore concepts around trust and thinking about media literacy and using it really to explore installation-based pieces that were interactive, so in a branching narrative form. They were also audio. One of them was an audio piece. We've also commissioned projects in the past, like HomeX, which was a combination of a 360 VR performance immersive game. So you could experience it either in a theater or you could experience it online as one of the gamers. That was massively ambitious, really beautiful piece of work. We've also commissioned and I've looked after a beautiful project that involved a lot of community engagement and was really looking at what activism means for the modern age. And they were exploring aspects of spatial audio and binaural sound from their kind of usual everyday kind of experience of having chorus ensembles in a site-specific way, and that was a beautiful piece of work that became a podcast. So that's just a really small example of what some of those projects could be. But I think actually when we say digitally innovative, what we're really talking about is projects that are sort of slightly beyond the mainstream of what we think about what digital is. So not necessarily just audio and video. It might be projects that are interactive. So it allows the audiences to have some agency, make choices, feel like they can make meaningful decisions in the work. They could be immersive, which doesn't necessarily mean it's a piece of VR in a headset. It could be that it's immersive because it's being projected using projection mapping. It could be that it's spatially immersive, so it's looking at sound in different ways. And then it's about using emerging tech as well. So what are the things that are, you know, kind of in early adoption that artists and organizations are interested in because it's going to help reach those audiences and tell those stories in new ways?
Wow. This sounds like art is so much more than going to a gallery and looking at a static picture that never changes, or just going to a gig and hearing a live performance. The idea of people being able to kind of interact and immerse themselves in. It sounds fascinating. I imagine for some people that it may be initially overwhelming looking at understanding all the different technology, the different platforms involved, the different costs involved, of how to kind of take the idea of that into something reality, which is something that they can flag up as part of this application process.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, sometimes it can be, you know, you think about, I've got an idea and how do I make that come to life? You know, what version of this will the audience see? And I think that's where we always, what I think is really important is, what is the story that you want to tell? What is the experience that you want to create? What value does it have? And why will audiences care? And if you ask that question, whichever project, whichever commission fund you're applying to, whoever you're working with when you're collaborating, actually it means that you're unpicking the most important things as a creative person, an artist and a maker, which is that you want to create these wonderful adventures. You want to create these beautiful pieces of artwork that are compelling, that are, you know, that tell stories that people want to hear, you know, that create those moments, you know. And I think that's the most important thing, thinking about how it's relevant to digital culture and why that might be innovative is almost like it becomes the vehicle. It's not the beginning, it's the means to the end. And so actually I always go back to, you know, what is the thing that's really important that the world must know about the thing that you want to create? And then how you create it, what tools you use, what technology that is, the people that you collaborate with, that will come together because it comes from a really important point, and that's, you know, story and experience. And that to me is like how we live through life. And I think that's I've kind of talked about that in a very poetic way rather than the nuts and bolts, but I think always going back to what is the core principle of your idea will always then help you to refine what it needs to be for this commission. So, because it's so tempting to say, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, and we're going to add in this, and we want to make it even more, you know, engaging and innovative, or we want to, you know, and it becomes this 10-headed Leviathan. And actually, if you pair it right back to that moment when you had a brilliant idea and you had interesting people that you wanted to work with and you wanted to create that story, then you can never lose that. You go back to that and it becomes the thing that needs to be told.
Yeah, like the heart and the soul of where the idea begins. For successful people, successful candidates who are commissioned, they will be matched with an exec producer. I imagine they are someone who can kind of help support that project through some of these more technical aspects that they might not have all the answers for.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I'm exec producing, it's really about getting under the skin of what the project is. So it's not just about the idea, you know, the kind of you know, what is the thing that you're making, but it's also kind of problem solving along the way. So it's making sure that actually as an exec producer, you're going to make something which is brilliant, of quality, you know, to the timeline and the budget. But it's also about going, how can you make this better? What have you not thought of when you're making this piece of work, you know? And sometimes that sounds like, oh, it's okay, I've got all the answers. But actually, when you're bouncing it off an exec producer, what it allows you to do is think about the things where maybe necessarily you don't have that skill set yet. So quite often it might be, okay, we're making something technically we've never made before. We don't know anything about it, but we've seen stuff. We've seen stuff like this. So we think we want to make it like that. And my job is to ask those intelligent questions, have that curiosity and intrigue, but also suggest stuff so that actually it's going to work. You know, you're able to get through the scoping, which is basically about making sure that your idea has absolute legs and it's going to work in that time frame and that budget, and then bringing in other people that can help you from the associates network. So the space have a huge pool of talent that we can bring in, and that's really to think about, once you've made this piece of work, once you know that you can test it and it's going to work and it sounds great, it looks brilliant, you know, we might even have played tested it a few times if it's, you know, quite, you know, kind of using a lot of emerging tech to make sure it doesn't break, you know. We might even play test it quite a lot to make sure if you're using emerging tech that it doesn't break. How do we get that out to the world? It's really easy to assume that people will want to see your piece of work, but actually always vying for people's time and attention. So it's about making sure that we have the marketing and distribution in place to get audiences to see all of this brilliant work that we commission.
Absolutely. And to know that that is beyond the initial funding scope, that that exec producer is by their side throughout the whole process, rather than here's a pot of money, off you go, let us know how you got on.
Yeah, absolutely. We you know, the exec producer, I always say it's like they're like your best friend who's going to be really honest with you when stuff is, you know, needs to be changed, tweaked, you know, looked at from a different angle when you need to try something else. But they're also there to listen to your first edits, play test your first tech pieces, you know, find the people that you might want to run it past, think about who you might want to connect to in terms of getting this out. So we are very much involved. And I like to be really hands-on when I'm working with the commission projects, because I'm really excited, like making something from scratch that has come out of, you know, someone else's, you know, brain and imagination. That's a brilliant place to be. So I'm always like, tell me what you're doing. What else do we need to think about? Have you thought about this? You know, what about, you know, and it's always about that. It's always about being this person that has this critical eye, but also this really helpful producer space to enable the commissioned organizations to produce something of a really high quality that they know that they get, their audience is going to love.
Fantastic. Well, I'm imagining that people who are busy typing the application form right now are going to be thinking how excited you're going to be in months to come, Harmi. Thank you so much for your enthusiasm and your excitement about this whole process and sharing the work that you do.
Brilliant. Thank you, Claire.
Well, let's continue to meet more of the space team. These are the people who will be reading and sifting through perhaps some bedtime reading of all of your applications and imagining and visualising some of your ideas happening and coming to life. Sarah Butcher, thanks so much for joining me. You are exec producer and you look after capture and film projects. What does this involve? What is it that you get to do?
Yeah, so I develop and support on the digital projects that use film. So those might be original projects or captures, adaptations or translations to screen. And I'll work for broadcast, so for television broadcast or maybe theatrical release in cinema. And I just help projects move through the production process, facilitating support they might need along the way. So that might be in really early stages, right through to when they're delivering and it's going out in the world to audiences.
Maybe we should be specific. What do you mean by capture for those that don't know?
Do you know what? It's such a funny word when I think about it. So capture generally refers to filming an existing performance piece. And it can be approached in really varying ways, but the kind of two ways that people most talk about capture is the idea of approaching it live. So you're filming something as an audience is watching it live and the piece is happening, or without an audience, which people describe as being captured as live. So you're removing the audience and you're filming it without them. And lots of projects now are a bit of a hybrid of both. So they're captured using both elements and then edited together afterwards. But essentially, it's this idea that something exists already and then in the live space, and then you're filming it, you're capturing it, and then releasing it as digital content.
Yeah, and something that we definitely need to touch upon here is about digital rights. I know that this can sometimes be something that people might find a little bit overwhelming or scary or unknown. What needs to happen in terms of our expectations when people apply with digital rights? How far along do they have to be and what do they need to include?
Yeah, so we understand that digital rights can be really complex. So our expectation isn't that everything comes to us completely bought out, ready to go, ready to distribute. And we're there to support organisations through that learning and through that process, because it's also about skills development to make people feel more confident that they could approach it alone again. And the thing that we want people to think about with their applications is that they've considered what they might need to seek licenses for. And so that's really just thinking about who is contributing to the work. So if you're thinking about a capture project, for example, to go back to your earlier question, Claire, it's thinking about who's been responsible for making that original piece of work. Is there music that might need licensing? Is there written text that might need licensing? What contributions are there in terms of performances or creative team behind the scenes? And then, you know, when we move into film, it's things like location and thinking, or if I do something here, have I got then permission to show that place on screen? And so it's thinking about that those licenses, what might need to be cleared, and then whether it's feasible, because we've got to sometimes be a bit realistic about whether or not you think you'd be actually able to start that process of licensing, and the costs involved. And we're able to provide advice throughout that process, but really it's just the fact that people have thought about it in that application stage, so that it's, you know, it's something that they're clearly ready to engage with.
Yeah, I mean, I know that you kind of look at the film side. I've certainly worked with commission projects before on the audio side, where we've taken monologues that were written for the stage and turned those into a haunted story podcast series. And that was looking at, okay, well, the actors' contracts, the renegotiation of the rights with the writer as well, because it was only ever meant to be for stage, not for digital, and whether we would be able to share that publicly, like internationally, not just in the UK. And that stuff that as an associate I was able to work through with the theatre company that had that commission project. I'm also really curious, Sarah, like, you know, what kind of things are exciting you? Because there are so many, you know, even when I put on a BBC Four late at night, you know, when I've got nothing to watch, I click on the iPlayer and there's a ton of various different captured stage plays that might be, you know, available on the iPlayer. But this field of capture is changing so much. Like, what are you seeing out there that's like really exciting you?
Yeah, I think beyond sort of capture, I think I'm really interested in this world of hybrid sort of filmmaking with performance, and how then that exists as its own sort of entity in the world, and how it can then be, you know, a tool for finding audiences. And I'm going to say new audiences because, for example, this is a bit mainstream, but I have become a bit obsessed with the band Jungle's visual album Volcano, which they describe as a motion picture, which I just think is cool. And I'm just like, that's just, you know, that's just a bold move, isn't it, to just go straight in and we're going to call this a motion picture. And it's sort of it's a visual album, and it's filmed in a really cinematic way with kind of choreography at its heart, but it moves through narrative chapters. And I think why I was really excited about it was because I discovered the film before the music, and now I'm obsessed with the music. So I wasn't a Jungle fan. So I sort of saw it, watched it, and now I've got Jungle on in the car all the time. Much to my family's annoyance. But it's this sense of, actually, it's a really good example of how digital art and digital artfulness and digital work has an opportunity to sort of really extend and go out there and find audiences for it that they might not have had before. So yeah, it's a really exciting space, and I think it's something that should encourage people to think about what they're already doing and how they might transform that into something that takes a filmic or digital, you know, a digital form or a captured form, as an extension of kind of the work that they're already thinking about.
Yeah, I think it's starting to get people to blur the boundaries. Often we've thought about things in very fixed boxes, and what we're seeing in the digital landscape now is that blurring. Like, our Jungle a music band or are they filmmakers? And I certainly see that in podcasts and audio world as well. Is it an audio book? Is it a podcast? It's also a podcast on YouTube. Does that make it a video? And you know, people hopefully applying will not necessarily put themselves in such a fixed box, but be open to blur those boundaries and see where that can take them.
Yeah, and it's also about that positioning piece, isn't it? Around how you're thinking about like audiences who aren't necessarily your traditional audience. So for example, with Capture, I feel my artistic preference is when Capture is lent into in a way that it's not about representing or re-representing the stage show exactly as if you were sat in the theatre as a bum on a seat, but more thinking about who the bums on seats are at home, the screen audience. And so whilst it still might be about filming the live experience and it might be captured in a way with that live audience, how is that story being retold? How is that story being translated to screen so that it's not about, oh, I missed that. It becomes its own thing with its own legacy and its own sort of retelling, I suppose.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, so many tips and things. My light bulb's like ding, 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 just listening to you there. Thank you so much, Sarah, for just letting us kind of peer under the carpet of what on earth you do. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Claire.
Well, next up, we're going to meet Head of Programmes, Rob Lindsay. Rob, how are you? I feel like we have met many times. You have seen so many of these commissioning rounds through the many eras of the space. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Yeah, you're right. It does feel like we've done a number of these. This is fantastic to be talking to you today.
So, Head of Programmes, what do you do? What does your job involve?
My name's Rob Lindsay. I'm head of programmes, and the programmes that the space runs aim to reflect the needs and of the sector, really, the questions being asked to us by the sector and the organisations and artists and teams that we work with. So a programme of support may involve webinars and advice or guidance. It may involve a programme of mentoring. It may well, as we're here to talk about today, involve a programme of commissions. And the idea is always to make sure that these programmes address and support organisations and the questions that they have.
Yeah, and beyond commissioning, if people are new to the space, there are so many different resources and webinars that you can watch back on the website. That's something that we should also mention. When it comes to commissioning rounds, how have things changed? How's the kind of the roadmap or the type of things that are coming through changed, you know, maybe pre-COVID, COVID, and then where is it looking now, the trends that you see?
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen immense change, and I think it has been an incredibly steep learning curve for a lot of organizations that perhaps in 2019 didn't necessarily think that digital projects were going to be part of their 3 or 5 year plan. I think all of a sudden, out of necessity, had to wrestle with new landscapes, new platforms, new tools, new skills that they needed to bring in-house as well. And certainly the projects that have been proposed to us have changed a great deal as a result of that. In addition to the types of organization that are applying and maybe how far along their digital journey they happen to be, I think the areas that people want to explore creatively have changed a great deal. So it may be that when we were under lockdown, people were far more introspective, were looking more internally. At the same time, were probably thinking about their own authentic voices as artists and creatives. I think as we've moved out of lockdown, people obviously have talked a great deal about mental wellness, but again, kind of moving back out and building communities. And then kind of as people have been moving forward, trying to establish kind of growth and flexibility, making sure that they as teams and individuals feel that they have dynamic skill sets that they can use to weather particular storms. At the same time, I would say a lot of people out of necessity had to learn digital skills and have found those to be, thankfully, fun and exciting and things that people want to expand upon as well. So it's been really notable year on year through this commissioning process how people's interests have changed and the types of project that we've thankfully been able to support people with.
I suppose there can be, sometimes people don't have all the answers. You know, they might have a nugget of an idea, and that has been a focal point that you as a team of commissioners want to look at for this, that people don't necessarily need to know every kind of aspect of how the project will unfold, but the idea of what they're hoping to achieve that then you can work with. And that is essential part of what you're looking here to help people upskill or move and have like a digital offering as part of their work.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think it's one of the things that makes the space very, very unique in that we're not just here to offer financial support, we're here to offer advice and guidance as well. And I would say at the same time, we want you to be able to create a digital project to deliver something. And we also want it to be able to reach the audience that it deserves as well. So when you're putting projects together, it is important to consider things like not just delivery of the project, but that route to audience as well. How is it going to reach people? How is it going to get the eyes and ears and brains and souls of the people that you want the attention of? At the same time as well, there may be additional aspects that you need to address around, as I said before, things like rights and so forth. So a piece that you might have had permission to perform in a small theatre space or a gallery space, if you're going to put things online, you're going to need to deal with different permissions for any kind of third-party materials that you're using. And at the same time, be aware of protecting your own IP and what you and your collaborative team may have put together as well. Or yourself, if you're working as an individual. So there may be aspects like that that need to be looked at. And again, I think it's about making sure you're hopefully going to make something that is going to arm you with a set of skills that moving forward are going to help you in the long term. We want to see that there's a legacy to this as well. So I think that's really useful to include some thinking around as well.
Yeah, and not letting people be deterred from applying. You know, the application form actually says, you know, what they want you to flag where people may need support.
Yeah, 100%. We call these digital pilots. You know, this is an opportunity for you to try something that you haven't done before. It should hopefully, stand on the shoulders of things that you've achieved previously. It should to you feel that there's a sense of a through line between what you've done before and what you want to do next. And I think with this in mind, it would be riotously unfair of us to expect you to be able to know how to do it all straight away and to be able to put that pitch together. So we do always say if there are kind of gaps or things you don't quite understand or areas where you would need support, or indeed there may even be questions you don't know to ask, you know, that's absolutely fine. Our team are here to help exactly that kind of applicant.
Yeah, and I think what people might not know is under the programme's kind of umbrella, there are the team of associates, obviously. There are toolkits, online toolkits. There are even connections about accessibility, reaching a more diverse audience. All these kind of resources that are tucked away with the space somewhere, either online now that you can access straight away, or as part of the support programme, which, again, like you say, is really unique.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a large part of the process as well. Every project that gets commissioned has access to not just those publicly available resources and items, but at the same time, you do have access to our associate network as well. And there are people to work with you in a brief period of pre-production to go through your project and make sure that you're absolutely getting as much benefit from this project as you possibly can. And I think crucially that it is achieving your aims as an individual or as an organization as well, making sure that this is absolutely getting you into a stronger position post-project as you were in beforehand.
Can we talk about money, right? Budgets. You know, for some people, that word is very exciting, the process of laying out a budget. For other people, it's probably their worst nightmare. In the guidelines, which people will see as part of the application form, it talks about what the budget can include and what it can't or what cannot be funded. Is it worth us just kind of tapping into, give people a general gist of what their budget lines can include first?
Yeah, absolutely. You're looking to complete and deliver a digital project. So any production costs that you've got towards creating that piece, also any costs you've got around publishing it as well. And of course, that kind of route to audience, so that we don't want to create wonderful things, put them online, and then for no one to know that they're there. You know, we want you to be able to reach an audience with your piece, for people to know it's there. So there can be budget towards marketing or distribution or promotion as well. And then going back to the production side, again, that can include, as you say, accessibility. It may include advice around rights. It may include collaborators that you're bringing in that you maybe haven't identified yet, or it may involve team members that you've already got that you've worked with many times. You may also find that you've got buyout fees in addition to the costs that you've got. It may be that you've got software costs or things that you need in order to produce pieces of your project in-house. It may be that you've also got a need for, well, in fact, I would say you will have a need for a contingency as well. We would always recommend a contingency of up to 10% just in case something changes along the way. And equally, for that reason, you may need insurance and legal costs as well. So all of these things can be included. The things that we can't fund, if it's all right for me to talk to that as well, would be any kind of overhead costs that aren't directly related to this digital project, this digital proposal, any costs that you've incurred prior to us funding your project as well. It's difficult as well to shortlist projects where it's primarily around equipment purchase as well. We are looking to create something. So if it's something that focuses primarily on buying lots of kit, that gets quite difficult as well. And the last thing is staff salaries, anything that's already being covered by other sources.
Yeah. And, you know, again, people don't need to have the full ideas. It's just good to kind of get an idea of what people are thinking. If people are successful in this commissioning round, then they are matched with yourself, with exec producers, with an associate, who can then kind of perhaps with a more expert eye, knowing typical costs around these projects, look through that budget line and kind of just say, you're about on par, or you're not, you forgot to add this as reassurance too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, as I say, we're here to help people do things that they haven't necessarily done before. And so it's really worth leaning into that advice that you're getting from those associates. They can absolutely advise you on that. It may well be that they also know more cost-effective ways of achieving the same thing that may free up budget for other aspects as well, which is often good to see. Or potentially to make something less expensive for you if it's a project that you want to continue on. If this is something that you want to have a real legacy of you returning to activity like this, they can help you tighten up that budget and potentially make future iterations of it more affordable to you as well.
Yeah, I like the idea around like the digital pilots. I mean, and that's where really this is an exciting opportunity, that perhaps people have had these kind of nuggets of ideas but haven't quite known what to do with them. And there are so many exciting things happening in the arts industry, particularly on the digital side now. I mean, are there like some kind of areas that you're seeing that are really fast developing at the moment that's kind of catching the interest of many people in the arts world?
I think what's really interesting is I think we've been through a period of almost digital novelty. That sounds more dismissive than I mean it to be, but there have been a period where I think lots and lots of tools and platforms and lots and lots of technology suddenly became very affordable and very interesting, and lots of people were really interested in exploring it. I think what's been really good to see is over the past couple of years there's been a real focus on audiences and audience experience as well. So while I think it's fantastically important to make sure that you have your opportunities for creative development, and it's incredibly important for you to try new things, I think it's incredibly nourishing as an artist or as a creative to be able to explore new avenues of making work. I think at the same time, it's been really, really good to see people saying, actually this needs to be something that connects with an audience, that this connects with a community. And again, that differentiation between audience and community, I think we're maybe out of a period of people just looking at numbers and saying this was successful because we reached 10,000 people. And we're now in an instance where people are saying, well, actually this other project may have reached fewer people, but we know that that's our community and we know that there's an ongoing relationship with that audience. So again, I think those two aspects have been really, really nice to see, whatever technology people are using and whatever art form people are working in.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, with the podcast world, it almost seems like if you haven't been on a podcast or started a podcast, who are you? It's exploded. It's such a competitive market. But that idea of, you know, audience focused and what is it you want people to do as a result of engaging in your project is something that often people forget about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mentioned before that, you know, we're really keen to see projects that build on what you've done before and something that's going to help you get to the subsequent project, the subsequent step. And I think it's the same with audiences as well. It's really nice if there is a kind of a route through our work for audiences or visitors or whoever it is that you're working with, and making sure that there is a kind of next step rather than we've done one fantastically satisfying, exciting, beautiful, empathetic arts experience using digital tools, and then we don't have anything to follow it up with. You know, that idea of building up an audience with a range of offers, I think, is really, really important to do. And at the same time, sometimes recognizing that a digital work might not be reaching the same people that your in-person practice is doing. You know, it might be for a different audience. There might be some overlap, but it might be a completely different offering or a completely different representation of yourself and your work aimed at a completely different demographic. So yeah, I think all of those things are really nice to consider.
Yeah, well, if you're listening, make sure you keep the word audience in your mind, because that's what we're going to continue to focus on next. And obviously, Rob, the reason we are doing this podcast is because we would like people to apply for commissioning. So that is our reason for us doing this content today. Look, it's great to speak with you again, and really great to kind of get an idea of how those kind of trends have changed over the last years and a sense of where things are going. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, well, next up, we're going to get into the idea of how we determine success and a bit about marketing and distribution. I have Rosanna Chianta on the line with me. Rosanna, do you want to kind of get into who you are and what exciting job aspect that you have as part of the core team of the space?
Yeah, thank you. So hi, I'm Rosanna. I joined the space last year as head of content distribution and audience metrics. So my role really is to oversee how we support the space's commissioned organisations with their marketing and distribution plans. And what that means in practice is really that we work together to define who your target audience is and the ways in which you might engage that audience. And this really informs everything from the formats to the length of your final work, through to the marketing assets you create, the platforms you use to distribute your work, the partnerships you might look to forge. And what I would say is that we really like to approach marketing and distribution as a really integral part of your commission. So that thinking is really built in from the start. It's not an add-on at the end. It's really kind of central to what you're doing all along the way, because it just informs so many of the choices that you make and how you design your content in the first place and how you plan to engage audiences with it. And the other side of my role is supporting audience evaluation. So I work closely with our commissioned organisations to define their objectives and match these with ways to measure them. So thinking about what success looks like for your project and how you might measure that success. And I guess the final thing to say on this is that a lot of this work is done in collaboration with the space's brilliant group of freelance associates who all specialise in different areas of digital marketing and distribution. So it's a really fluid and flexible model that we try to tailor to suit each organisation. And I guess we want it to have a legacy for your you and your organisation as well, so that when we work together, it's a really sort of collaborative effort focused on upskilling and problem solving together.
Are there kind of typical ways that the space will measure the parameters, typical parameters of how you measure success, or things that people need to track as they would work through one of the projects?
This is a really great question, and I would say it's one of the most sort of interesting parts of my role in terms of how you determine whether or not a project has been successful. And what I would say here is that you get to decide this. Broadly speaking, you know, we want to know from you in your application, if you're applying to the space for a commission, for example, we want to know from you in your application what success looks like. So we are always looking for proposals that demonstrate value for money in terms of audience reach. And so I guess what we're really interested in is a clearly defined potential to reach audiences and to give us a sense of what that means for you based on your previous activity or benchmarks. But I will caveat that massively by saying that this doesn't need to be about big numbers. I think sometimes people think that we want to see huge numbers on an application form, but that's not true. What we're more interested in is how you create meaningful impact. So we're really interested in how you want your project to make a difference. And so, for example, reaching diverse and underrepresented audiences is often a goal with digital work. And you might be creating work for an audience that's new to your organisation. And if that's the case, then you've got to start somewhere, haven't you? So a relatively small number is still really relevant and hugely valuable in that scenario. And so I guess just think quite carefully about how you want to determine whether or not your project has been successful in terms of that audience reach and engagement, and also the ways in which you would like audiences to engage with you. Are you just interested in counting, for example, views or listens of a video or a podcast, for example? Or are you more interested in creating a dialogue with your audience? And are you looking for them to interact with you in a specific way? In which case, tell us about that. You know, tell us about how you're planning to achieve that and what sort of interaction or feedback you might be looking for. These are all sort of really interesting questions to think about when you're designing your content and thinking about what that audience, what value you're creating for audiences and what they will benefit from in engaging with your work. And I would say as well that it's okay if you don't have all the answers to this question. Please just be honest and tell us about what your vision for the work is. You know, we will work together to sort of define this in more detail with you and to sort of map this out from the start of your commissioning journey. But it's really helpful for us to have a sense of who you're planning to reach, how they might find and interact with your work, and what you'd like their experience to be. Those are sort of some core questions that we will want to know from you.
I wonder whether it's worth us clarifying here, because there may be people who haven't applied for a project commissioning round like this before, which is what we're hoping, really. What do we mean when we say a digital audience? And for some people, it's kind of establishing, well, how is a digital audience or a digital piece of work, say, different from an in-person audience or an in-person event?
This is a really interesting question. And I guess what I would say, first of all, is that the audiences for the space commissions aren't necessarily digital audiences. So it's digital work that we're commissioning, but that work might take place in a variety of different settings. Yes, it might exist purely online or in a digital format, but it might also be a work that audiences experience in person, but that incorporates some kind of digital media. So it might be an immersive work, for example. But I guess to go back to your question about how audiences for these works might differ from a traditionally sort of in-person audience in the arts world, I guess I would think about your access point and what opportunities digital or online work present in terms of enabling you to engage with audience groups who might be new to your work. And this might be due to a variety of different reasons and barriers, such as geography or access requirements. And if you're publishing your work online, in many ways, You have that opportunity to reach more people, but actually your work has to work a lot harder in order to cut through the noise in that online space and with people's attention spans online, for example. So again, this is just why keeping the audience at the heart of what you're doing really, really matters. And all these decisions about formats, platforms, how to design your content in the first place, that all sort of feeds into how you create work that really resonates with your audience. And if that sounds overwhelming, I would say that it's totally okay if you're doing this for the first time. We can absolutely support you and work together to develop this. I guess what we're really looking for is a willingness to collaborate and a sense of who you are creating this work for and what your plan is to engage with them. And we can kind of take it from there with you in terms of developing that further.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing I realise with a lot of digital videos or podcasting is having content that has a punch right from the start.
Yeah.
You put your best shots, you know, you come in and it's like the old 60-second beer test, isn't it? You're kind of thinking, right, that 60 seconds needs to grab someone. But the other key thing that we maybe should reference with the marketing and distribution hat on is the idea you mentioned about collaboration, but even like partnerships of thinking right from the application. Are there any partnerships we already have or maybe want to seek out that might help us reach a new audience and share this? Be that with, I mean, we've had people collaborate with all kinds. I remember I worked with someone who ended up building a relationship to get exclusive platform marketing with The Guardian online. Those kind of things help build that audience if you haven't got a digital audience already.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're hugely important. And actually, those partnerships are something that we try and think about quite early on as well, because the reality is, if you're creating work or looking to engage an audience that's new to you or your organization, you often will need to partner with others in order to get your work seen and to test whether it's relevant to your audiences and make sure that you aren't making assumptions about what people are interested in. So that can really, and partnerships can really add a greater sense of sort of audience reach and engagement, but also that real sort of authenticity that you might be looking for in terms of making sure that your content is designed in a way that's really relevant for your audiences. So we try and think about that from the start as well. And there are so many exciting opportunities to explore there, I think, and different avenues depending on what you're looking to do and what form that your work takes. It can often be a great unknown, the partnerships question, because sometimes it feels like, you know, you're putting lots of feelers out and you're not sure what might land. But actually, you know, we work with you to kind of make sure that those pitches are quite targeted and our freelance associates are really experienced in this space as well, in terms of helping to bring that knowledge of their experience of working with certain partners and what they might be looking for to help inform you and your kind of project as well. So it's really exciting that, you know, in terms of the opportunities, I think, that it presents.
Brilliant. Well, Rosanna, it's great to introduce you to our Space Arts podcast audience. See what I did there? Thank you so much for your time and sharing what it is that you do and inspiring those listening.
Thank you.
Thank you, Fiona, Rob, Sarah, Harmeet and Rosanna. We are so grateful to Arts Council England for its funding of this commissioning round, designed to build the capacity of the arts and cultural sector to make and distribute digital content. And thank you for listening to this bonus episode of the Space Arts Podcast. If you've not already listened to our other podcast episodes, then they're all available and online, waiting for you to download and wrap your ears around. Plenty more brilliant case studies to hear in the back catalogue, and do visit the website thespace.org, where you'll find not only access to apply for this commissioning round online, but also a ton of really brilliant resources, links to free training events that are running, and some fantastic toolkits which can really supercharge your understanding of the digital arts world. Have a great day, whatever big ideas you're currently working up. Thanks for listening and good luck.